Deutsche Welle, Africa Link.
A very good morning to you this Thursday, October 22nd. Welcome to this edition of Africa Link. I'm Jane Ayeko Kumet in Bonn, Germany. Coming up, the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development discusses the future of Mali in Paris. France will donate over 300 million euro to the African nation.
As Mali needs to take its recovery and reconstruction forward, it's now necessary to have a fresh meeting to review the situation.
South African police fire rubber bullets and tear gas to clear protests as student demonstrations over fees escalate.
We could hear them when they passed inside parliament, pushing the gates of parliament, getting inside. They were saying, we are now in control. This is what we want. The future is in our hands.
All that plus our Learning by Ear series coming up shortly.
Top story.
Malian President Boubacary Keïta is in France for a two-day state visit. On Wednesday, he held talks with his French counterpart, François Hollande. A donors' conference is due to take place later today in Paris. The focus is on Mali's economic recovery, to which France is expected to contribute more than 300 million euro. In a moment, we'll be hearing from an analyst about the challenges facing Mali. But first, here's Fred Muvunyi and Privilege Mushandri with this fact box.
Conflict erupted in 2012 when loose coalition of separatists, rebels and Al-Qaeda-linked militants swept across the north of the country before a French-led military intervention in 2013 drove them from the main towns they had been occupying.
At first, the West African regional body, the Economic Community of West African States, ECOWAS, of which Mali is a member, spearheaded initiatives to resolve the complex Malian conflict. Alongside Burkina Faso's mediation effort, it was drawing up plans to send troops to Mali, but a UN-approved deployment came as a last resort in 2013, so that the mediation effort could be given a chance to succeed and troops could be given training.
Germany had joined France and other international players to root out insurgents in northern Mali. Up to now, Germany has been primarily involved in training the Malian army as part of an EU program. Some 200 German army trainers are currently stationed in southern Mali.
After back-and-forth negotiations between the Malian government and the former Tuareg rebels, both sides reached a deal last week and agreed to put the war behind them. However, analysts say the agreement will not guarantee stability in the north.
The security situation there and years of failed promises to address the marginalization of northern communities have created deep mistrust among the various stakeholders. For lasting and durable peace to prevail, observers say the government must ensure a genuine devolution of power that takes into account the ethnic diversity in northern Mali and fair distribution of revenue to improve service delivery and infrastructure in the peripheral regions.
The conflict has left more than 300,000 people displaced. There is a disastrous hunger situation in Timbuktu region, and tens of thousands of children are at increasing risk of dying from malnutrition.
Mali held presidential and parliamentary elections in 2013 after a coup in 2012. The new president has pledged to restore his predecessor's anti-corruption initiatives, including the creation of a general auditor's office. Nevertheless, corruption remains a problem in government, public procurement, and both public and private contracting. The judicial system is inefficient and prone to corruption.
Mali is one of the poorest countries of the world, with agriculture being the primary industry. Along with gold and livestock, the largest crop exported is cotton. The 300 million euros of aid, which France is expected to announce, come in addition to another 300 million granted at a Mali donors conference held in Brussels in 2013.
Mavunyi and Privilege Musandri with that fact box. We now join Paul Melly, an Associate Fellow, Africa Program at Chatham House in London. He will be telling us about the timing of the conference on Mali and France's contribution.
In May 2013, French and African forces intervened to end the jihadist control of northern Mali and liberate the north of the country. Donors met in Brussels and pledged 3.3 billion euros to get Mali's recovery underway. They've now dispensed to Mali 2.9 billion of the 3.3. So most of that money has been used over the last 2 years. So as Mali needs to take its recovery and reconstruction forward, it's now necessary to have a fresh meeting to review the situation.
Talk about pledging funds. We hear that France is expected to contribute some 300 million euro to revamp Mali's economy. Is this figure realistic?
Yes, I think it is a realistic pledge. France is anyway a significant donor to Mali and has been for a very long time. And France does see Mali as an absolutely top priority country, both for its regional strategy to try and rebuild stability and counter the threat of jihadism in the Sahel, and also because Mali is a country with long-standing close ties to France.
Now, one of the key objectives of the meeting will be to strengthen the dialogue on public policies like decentralization, jobs and stability. How challenging will it be for Mali to achieve all this ambitious plan in light of the current situation?
Well, it's going to be difficult, certainly, and particularly difficult in the north. There have been proposals in Mali for very many years for decentralization, and quite often they were not very effectively implemented. So now this is a fresh effort to relaunch the decentralization process because the country is geographically huge. It makes sense to get power down to the local level. But the problem is that local administration and government and the structures to actually plan local development policies and administer programs locally are quite weak, and they will take time to build up. And in the north of the country, where the conflict has taken place, we have a further complication, which is, of course, that the different segments of the population and reflected in different armed groups, as it were, tussling for influence.
At this point in time, most African countries are talking about African solutions for African problems, but we still realize that France's influence over Mali continues to grow. Is this the right thing for Mali to do, or would Mali rather look back to regional institutions, for instance, ECOWAS?
In the crisis of 2013, Mali asked for help to stop the whole of the north of the country being completely swallowed up by the jihadist groups and to stop those groups breaking through and invading the south and threatening Bamako. And of the countries in the international community, the only major international military power that was actually prepared to do anything was France. African countries also helped considerably, but of course they didn't have the same high-tech military means.
I was speaking to Paul Melly of Chatham House, London.
Africa Link, every weekday on DW Deutsche Welle.
In South Africa, protests over a planned hike in tuition fees turned violent as students stormed Parliament in Cape Town on Wednesday. Police fired tear gas and stun grenades to disperse the students. President Jacob Zuma was inside Parliament attending a budget speech. Members of the Economic Freedom Fighters interrupted the budget reading as they started shouting, "Fees must fall," a slogan that the students are using. For more on the developments in South Africa, we now join our correspondent Tuso Kumalo in Johannesburg. Tuso, why did the protest turn violent all of a sudden?
Students in Cape Town decided to go to Parliament because this is where the Minister of Finance was delivering a speech for the budget, and they decided to go there because Zuma was there, the Minister of Education was there, and they decided to go there.
Does student politics play anything in the country's political decision?
To a certain extent, yes, because the student has a strong presence within the ANC and within all other opposition parties. But what you saw today were students who needed no political power to do it. It was students saying, we are now in control. You could hear them when they best inside parliament, pushing the gates of parliament, getting inside. They were saying, we are now in control. This is what we want. The future is in our hands. But unfortunately, turned into chaos. As you'd know, police had to use stun grenades to try and disperse them. Some students were injured, some were trampled by their colleagues. And of course, the students also were pelting stones and bottles to the police officers. And it was just a chaotic scene, a scene that we last saw in 1976 when the youth decided to protest against the use of Afrikaans. Those were scenes that we saw right at the doorstep of parliament.
Now, we understand that the Minister for Higher Education, Bled Nzimanda, addressed protesting crowds outside the parliament. What did he say and how did the students react?
The minister tried to address them, but he could not. Students were already upset. Remember, the student went to parliament around 11 in the morning, and the ministers and the parliamentarians decided to go ahead at 2 o'clock to start the sitting. And it was only after the chaos that the minister came out to try to address the students. They were very upset. They never gave him an ear. But the students were already upset. Remember, some of them had been injured. Some of them had been arrested. So it was too late from the minister.
To Sokomalu in Johannesburg. You can also find details of this story plus others, including the visit of the Hamas leader to South Africa, on our website dw.com/Africa. Tanzania is heading to general elections on October 25th. The opposition party Chadema is posing a strong challenge to the Chama Cha Mapinduzi, CCM. CCM has ruled Tanzania since its creation in 1977. Elections will also take place on the semi-autonomous island of Zanzibar. This report by Muhammad Halif has been adapted for Africa Link and is now presented by Ole Tangan Jr.
The voters of the semi-autonomous Zanzibar archipelago are voting for their own president and the members of the House of Representatives. The incumbent president, Ali Mohamed Shaheen, from the CCM, is running against his first deputy, Saif Sharif Hamad, from the CUF, or Civic United Front. Haider Manawea, a 65-year-old disabled man, is sitting on his chair inside Kisonge, a CCM stronghold, about 2 kilometers from the old stone town of Zanzibar.
Mbele kwa mbele is such a pure Swahili jargon that directly says it all. It means never turn back, no second thought. Just go to vote for the party that tells you to do it.
The Civic United Front has been in the government of national unity in Zanzibar since 2010 as junior partner, and many are of the opinion that the party has successfully used its time in the power-sharing government to strengthen the position of Zanzibar in the union with mainland Tanzania. Salim Kasim is the director of elections.
The best thing to remember is that the government of national unity has made things to go smoothly as they seem today. Its presence has made even political campaigns to be peaceful. Even if there were some incidences, they are just minor.
There have been a few reports of incidents where party supporters have been attacked on their way from campaign rallies, but the number and intensity are relatively lower compared to other elections, notably in 2000 and 2005, when reports of deaths and injuries had been common. For the residents and business owners on Zanzibar, the main hope is that the peaceful environment surrounding their campaigns will continue through the elections on Sunday.
Ole Tangen Jr. with a report by Muhammad Halef. Let's now join our Learning by Ear team.
Deutsche Welle, Learning by Ear. Listen up, shape your future.
Hello and welcome to Crossroads Generation. This is the final episode of our Learning by Ear radio novella about the lives of several young Africans.
We're standing at the crossroads. We're looking for our way. Crossroads Generation.
When we last heard from them, a huge flood had just destroyed Kisimba. Dan, the young environmental activist from the neighboring country, Laboria, stood up for the local people's rights to compensation and better protection. But the district commissioner wasn't going to let Dan get away with this. When Dan was arrested, he had just started dating journalism student Tina. Was she able to help him out of this situation? While Dan was held in prison, his dad Kanyama was in a different kind of trouble. Kanyama had come to Kisimba to look after his timber business. But then he was in a bad car crash and the floodwaters swept him away. An old forest dweller saved him, but...
But why have you bound my hands and feet?
Shh! Who are you and where do you come from?
I can't remember my name or where I come from. I don't know where I am.
You've lost your memory.
Mercy's mother Lulu was also affected by the floods. She lost her vegetable stall at the local market. Luckily, her twin sons Kadu and Banda were awarded scholarships so they could stay on at school. That was all thanks to Anita, a very dedicated teacher at Kisimba Special School. Anita is also from Laboria, and she's a close friend of Mercy's. Mercy is married to Nikki, who is HIV positive. The young couple had a hard time accepting Nikki's status, but little by little, they worked out how to live with it. And in the end, they had some very good news, which Nikki shared with the HIV support group.
There she is, my wife and my best friend, Mercy Msoto Jumbe. As you can see, she's heavily pregnant. And yes, that is our baby growing in her belly. And in case you're wondering, yes, my wife is HIV negative.
By the way, Nikki and Mercy already have a child, Linda. Nikki is not her biological father, but he adopted her after marrying Mercy. 5 years have passed since we last heard from our friends. Let's find out what they've been up to in this very last episode of Crossroads Generation entitled All Is Said and Done.
Lexi, Linda, hurry up, you naughty children. You're going to be late for school and Mummy has to work.
Morning, Mercy, my love.
Hey, somebody's up early. And you're looking great, Nikki.
Yeah, I have this interview at the Kisimba Community Center, remember?
Ah, yes. I really hope you get the job.
I hope so too. That's as long as some uptight exec doesn't decide to reject me because of my HIV status.
Maybe this time just don't tell them you're HIV positive.
If they want me, they'll have to take me as I am. I don't want to live a lie, Mercy.
But even if they don't employ you, maybe we could start our own business. That gym you've always wanted to own, or a nutritional counseling center. Until then, we're doing fine with my job as press secretary at the ministry.
I really want to work, Mercy. I'm getting tired of spending all my time here at home.
My darling husband, you've been doing so much to help with the children. Frankly, I don't know what we would have done these past few years if you hadn't been here to take care of them while I went to work.
Yeah, well...
I'm proud of you. We all are. Linda could never ask for a better father. And Lexi? He loves you so much.
I love them, too.
See? Everything turned out just fine.
Well then, let's hope good luck stays on our side.
It will.
Thanks for meeting me, Tina. It's good to see you.
So, Dan, what brings you to Kisimba?
I came to check on my dad's timber business.
What? I thought you were an environmental activist. Now you're working with your dad in the timber business. What happened to you?
Of course, I'm still an environmentalist. And yes, I am now working with my dad.
But you and your dad were sworn enemies.
That was years ago, Tina. My dad spent some time living with forest dwellers, not entirely voluntarily. But it did make him think again. He really is a changed man.
A changed man who still cuts down trees.
Yes, his company fells trees. But have you noticed how dense and green Kisimba's forests are now? Who do you think planted those trees?
Your dad?
My dad's company. I introduced the policy of cut one, plant three. I told him I'd only work with him if his company adopted sustainable working practices.
Okay, now that really is a surprise.
I also came to Kisimba because, well, because there is some unfinished business I felt I needed to sort out.
Unfinished business?
Things didn't end well between the two of us, Tina, did they? I just felt I ought to explain myself.
There's nothing to explain, Dan. I should have known. We fought so hard, organizing demos to have you released, and then you just walked away, back to Laboria.
What else could I do?
You left without so much as a goodbye.
Tina, I am sorry. Please, don't be mad at me.
I'm not mad at you, Dan. Well, not anymore. It's all water under the bridge. We've both moved on, no hard feelings.
Yeah, I can see you've moved on just fine. Who's the lucky fellow who put that ring on your finger?
None of your business. You don't know him anyway. I met him at my workplace, at the Kisimba Women's Bank.
What do you do at the bank?
It's a microfinancing bank. It empowers women financially by giving them loans to start small businesses.
Sounds great.
Hi, Mama Masi.
Hey, Anita, my daughter from another country. What are you doing here in Tandika?
I work in Tandika, remember?
Oh, you're right. It's been so long since I saw you. You should visit more often.
That's going to be a bit hard, Mama Masi.
Why?
I've decided to go back to Laboria.
Great. Now everyone is leaving me. My boys are away in high school, Masi's with her family, and now you?
You still have your little daughter, Joy.
But it won't be long before she's out of the house as well. I guess I'll die a lonely old woman. I should start adopting stray cats.
Mama Masi, you're always so funny. You don't need anyone anymore. Look at your shop. So nice and well-stocked.
Looks can be deceptive, my dear. I'm still paying back the loan from the bank where your friend Tina works.
I see. Well, I hope you've insured the shop this time.
Of course. I've learnt my lesson. So, why are you leaving us?
I've saved up some money and I want to start a school for children with special needs in Laboria.
I see. Well, we'll really miss you here.
You know what they say, Mama Masi? East or West?
Home is best. I know. Make sure you invite me to the wedding you and your boyfriend have been planning. Oh, you think Idoro has been visiting you from Laboria every so often? Maybe this is even why you're going back home.
Mama Masi.
What? Good luck to you, girl. Anyway, I'm just kidding. I couldn't afford the ticket anyway.
So, Nikki, how are they, my daughter Masi and my grandchildren?
They were fine when I left this morning, Dad.
She's a good one, that girl Masi. You be sure to hang on to her. Oh, my head.
Dad, are you okay? Did you take your medicine?
I'm just back from my dialysis. That procedure is so expensive. See what my poor eating habits and lazy lifestyle have done to me. Make sure you teach your children to have a healthy lifestyle, Nikki.
I will, Dad. After all, I am the Kasimba Community Center's deputy nutritionist.
Oh, so that means you got the job.
Finally. I was getting so frustrated, not having any work.
Oh, congratulations, my son. I'm really proud of you.
And so we bring down the curtain for good this time on our friends from Crossroads Generation. A big thank you to all the Learning by Ear fans who've stayed with us on the journey through all four seasons to this, our final episode. Crossroads Generation was written by Crispin Mwakideu and James Mohando. If you want to listen again to any episodes from the series, just visit our website dw.com/LBE. Until we meet again, goodbye and take care.
And now, a reminder of our top stories. The OECD is discussing the future of Mali in Paris, with France pledging over €300 million to the West African country. South African police fire rubber bullets and tear gas to disperse protesters as student demonstrations escalate. Do send us your opinion via text message to +49 160 957 59510. Or an email to feedback.africa@dw.com. You can also send us a letter to Africa Link, DW 53110, Bonn, Germany. That's it for today. Thanks for listening.